And Trump has done, inviting members from the Senate and House Republicans to Camp David, to the White House, kind of showering them with all sorts of perks and things that are fun to do. He hadn't done anything like this on a regular basis until it was impeachment time.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit, Mara, because we have seen the Republican messaging on impeachment shift over time. And do you think that this is the product of some of the wooing and talking that the president has done? At the beginning, they were talking about, well, he might have done something wrong, but it wasn't impeachable. And now they're really saying there wasn't anything wrong.
Well, not all of them are saying there was absolutely nothing wrong, but they are united in that the impeachment is a partisan process. It's unfair. They just want to undo the last election. What the president has asked for is a defense on the merits, to say that the call was perfect, that asking the president of Ukraine to investigate the Bidens is fine. That I don't think the Republican Party has embraced completely yet. That we're going to see in the Senate when it gets to a trial. But I do think that the Republican Party has unified very energetically against impeachment as a process. And they're really, most of them aren't talking about the president's behavior at all. They're just talking about all the horrible things that the Democrats have done. They've done things, that have shut Republicans out of the process. So I think the defense is still mostly on process, but you are seeing more and more voices condone the conduct also.
It's interesting. We saw Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell come out recently and say, I am not an impartial juror, because this will move after the House vote to a Senate trial. And he has said, this is an entirely political proceeding, which it is.
Yeah,
right?
I don't, Democrats made a big fuss about that, saying you're supposed to be an impartial juror. Well, they do take an oath to be impartial when the trial starts in the Senate. But this is not the kind of jury trial that you see in a courtroom out in the real world, where jurors can be struck if one attorney or the other thinks they're not going to be fair. This is a political process. I think when Mitch McConnell says that, I'm not an impartial juror, or where Lindsey Graham says, I don't need to read any of the evidence, I've already made up my mind, they're speaking to an audience of one.
Let's listen.
They want to communicate to Donald Trump that they have his back. So don't worry, Mr. President. Stay quiet. Stop tweeting. We'll take care of this.
Right. Let's listen to that clip. This is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking yesterday.
I'm not an impartial juror. This is a political process. There's not anything judicial about it. Impeachment is a political decision. The House made a partisan political decision to impeach. I would anticipate we will have a largely partisan outcome in the Senate. I'm not impartial about this at all.
And Democrats in the Senate have said that they want their own witnesses, right, including former National Security Advisor John Bolton and acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer talking with Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition.
This has to be a fair trial, and there are a good number of my Republican colleagues who have said that, they need more evidence. There are no better people than presenting this evidence than this. So our Republican colleagues, Leader McConnell and the President, have two choices. Do they want to get all the evidence out, or do they want to hide the evidence, resist letting the facts come out, and basically engage in a cover-up?
And Republicans rejected that proposal yesterday, right, Mara? How do you think this is going to play out, both of you, if the House votes to impeach the president?
Well, what's so interesting is you heard Chuck Schumer there. The shoe is on the other foot. In the Senate, it will be Democrats complaining about the process because they're in the minority. And what Chuck Schumer was saying is we want to hear witnesses with direct knowledge of what the president did and said.
So remember, that's Mick Mulvaney, the OMB
and
John Bolton,
the former National Security Advisor. Remember, Republicans complained bitterly in the House, hey, this is all hearsay, secondhand. We are not hearing anyone with firsthand evidence. There were a few witnesses that had listened in on the call, for instance, or talked to the president directly, like Gordon Sondland. But the witnesses that would have provided direct evidence were all blocked by the White House. They refused to honor the subpoenas for Mick Mulvaney's testimony, for instance. So here we go into the Senate, where Democrats are going to be in the minority. They're not going to be have as much control over the process. And, you've got Chuck Schumer trying to frame the argument that the president has not only done something that was wrong, but also tried to cover it up.
President Trump has said he's not going to be watching today. Do we believe him? Unclear. But
he often says he's not going to be watching.
And then tweets about it.
Exactly. But he is definitely making his thoughts known, releasing a letter to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. This was a regurgitation of some of the same talking points that he has used. But very strident language, I guess, is one way to describe it.
Yeah, a lot of exclamation points, kind of like a 6-page tweet. He said that the people on trial in the Salem witch trials had gotten more due process than he had in the House. He said he didn't believe Nancy Pelosi when she said she prays for him. She is a devout Catholic. Mm. He also said that the other thing that seemed to have really offended him and kind of gotten under his skin was he didn't like it that she was saying this was a solemn process and that she had tried to go about this in a very dignified, somber way. He said, nobody believes you. And that's interesting because, Kelsey, have we heard any reporting that behind the scenes Nancy Pelosi is gloating or gleeful about impeachment? I haven't heard that.
No, that is absolutely not what we have heard. Some of this may also be because Pelosi was gloating a bit about some legislative wins that Democrats have had. Because it's the strange thing about this moment is that even as impeachment has been marching forward to this day, Democrats have been working with people from the White House, not necessarily the president himself, but with his representatives to get some major legislation passed. The House has passed spending bills, 1,000 pages or more of spending bills, almost $1.4 trillion. They passed a major National Defense Authorization Act, which included 12 weeks of paid parental leave for all federal workers. And they're getting ready to try to vote on USMCA, the president's renegotiation of NAFTA. This is a big legislative week, and it's almost head-snapping how much we are seeing two different Washingtons this week.
You know what's so interesting about that? When President Trump first came into office, there was a theory that he would be able to triangulate and do all sorts of deals with Democrats. He even said that. He's the great deal maker. Mm. And even more than that, ideologically, on so many things, he was closer to the Democrats than the Republicans. He wasn't a free trader, like traditional Republicans are. He believed in lots of government spending, no entitlement reform. What you saw on trade is Democrats traditionally had been against these big free trade agreements. The new USMCA agreement is not really a free trade agreement. It has a lot more protectionism in it. It has things that the unions liked. So he did really triangulate there. And the same thing on spending. Republicans traditionally were fiscal conservatives, didn't like big deficits. Now the deficits have gone up higher under Donald Trump than any other president. So he, in the end, did triangulate, make deals with Democrats that made Democrats very happy. And it shows you that when he wants to or feels he needs to, he is happy to triangulate, which means make a deal with the opposite party and leave your own guys on the sidelines.
I should say, though, Democrats that I talked to point out that it wasn't the president himself negotiating.
Right. It was Robert Lighthizer, who's a managed trade guy forever.
And also the Treasury Secretary is the person who negotiated the spending bill, and that Democrats feel that they have found their partners in the White House when they need to get things done, and that this fight over impeachment is the more personal thing for the president right now.
Right, but he didn't object to these. I mean,
he did not.
He didn't negotiate them himself, but he didn't object to them.
Right. Yeah. And while the president has tried to use this on the campaign trail, he talks about impeachment. He tries to blame Democrats, calling them partisan, calling it a witch hunt, trying to gin up his base. No president wants to be impeached, Mara.
And he doesn't want to be impeached. He's made that very clear. He says it's an ugly word. No, he doesn't want to be impeached. He says that he thinks he can use impeachment to his political benefit. And, you know, we'll see. He might. It certainly worked to Bill Clinton's benefit.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the polls. I mean, we've seen a collection of polls. The website 538 says 47% back impeachment, 46.4%.
Impeachment and removal? Because that's very important.
Right. No, just impeachment.
Oh, well, that's irrelevant.
Right. Okay. But what I'm saying is 57% say that he has committed an impeachable offense. However, they're not convinced that he should be removed from office. It's a really mixed bag. Mara, you obviously have thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Look, the relevant question is, do you think the president should be impeached and removed? Big majorities were for the impeachment inquiry. They were happy about that. Then we had a kind of split on it. Doesn't matter what they think about impeachment. What it matters what they think about impeachment and removal. And what we've seen is, even though big majorities, around 70% in many polls, said what the president did was wrong when he asked a foreign government to investigate a political rival, the numbers of people who think he should be impeached and removed because of that are much lower. And we've seen the country split. Some polls recently have shown a little bit of slippage for the people who support impeachment and removal. But Fox's poll recently still showed about 50% for impeachment and removal, and I think like 47%
against. Means by and large, these many, many weeks of this process did not change anyone's mind.
And to some degree, that can be. I mean, there was an effort by both sides towards the end of this just to kind of shore up their own members. There was a lot of talking to the people inside of the Capitol when we were seeing, say, the judiciary hearings where people were making their statements. It was not as much about trying to change hearts and minds.
What's so interesting is the Democrat, when they get outside of the hearing rooms, Democrats go home and they really don't want to talk about impeachment. They want to talk about lowering drug prices. Of course, they're just passing some legislation on that. They want to talk about other things that they're doing to help people deal with the problems that people actually care about, like the high cost of housing and college and health care and retirement. Republicans, when they get out of Washington, want to talk about impeachment because they have found that impeachment is something that energizes the president's base. There is a theory among Republicans that it also is becoming unpopular among independents, but there's different polling on that. We don't know what the political endgame of this will be. Will there be a backlash against impeachment? Will there be a groundswell for impeachment? Will it be a kind of stain on Donald Trump? We don't know yet.
Well, we're 11 months out from the election.
Yeah, that's
a
long,
that's
long
a long time. Will impeachment really be on anyone's
mind
by then?
In March, will we be talking about something else? You know,
Kelsey, can you just give us the lay of the land of what we're expecting to transpire over these next hours?
Yeah, we've gotten a little bit of more detail over the past few minutes here. Now, as we were discussing, Diana DeGette of Colorado will be presiding over the majority of the day. But Speaker Pelosi will be coming to the floor and will preside over both votes on the articles of impeachment. And she will give a speech at the open of the general debate, which we're expecting sometime later this morning.
We should just pause and say that each article is being voted on separately.
That's right. And that gives each member a chance to, if they wanted to, potentially vote separately. We've heard from at least one person that they plan to vote yes for one, no for the
Who
other.
Who is that? I'm putting you on the spot.
I will have to go double
That's
check
okay.
my notes.
But that is interesting. That's what it affords, that opportunity, if someone wanted to separate the abuse of power from the obstruction of Congress charge.
Though we don't really expect that to be what the majority of Democrats do. The majority of Democrats that we talk to say they are. If you're going to impeach the president on one charge, it is clear that these two charges are linked. Mm-hmm. Right now, we are watching the House vote on a motion to adjourn from Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, who is basically saying we shouldn't vote on anything at all today, that these articles of impeachment shouldn't ever get a vote, and he wants the House to close up shop and go home. That is expected to be voted down along party lines, and then they will start debating a procedural motion called the rule, which sets up, as the name would suggest, the rules for debate for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And that will involve 6 hours of debate, though there is plenty of time for Republicans to bring up more of these procedural hurdles and roadblocks so they have to vote.
Kelsey, do we know if it's going to be 3 hours of Democrats, 3 hours of Republicans, or as it was during Clinton and his impeachment, back and forth? I mean, do we know what this is going to look like?
We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. There will be an opportunity for opening statements, which we expect to start sometime around 10 o'clock. We'll hear from both sides at that point. I'm looking through here. The Intel committee will have debate starting in the mid-afternoon, and there will be a separate set of debate run by the Judiciary Committee so that they can kind of present both sides of these two articles of impeachment.
Let's take a moment and just do an overview of what we know of the charges. Mara, two charges, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Let's start with the abuse of power.
Okay, abuse of power. You know, remember there was a lot of discussion about whether the president would be charged with bribery, an actual crime, even though an actual crime isn't required for impeachment. It certainly helps to have one. But the Democrats decided to make a more broader, slightly vaguer charge, abuse of power. What they're saying is when the president asked a foreign government to announce an investigation into one of his top rivals for the 2020 election. He abused his power because what he did is he invited foreign intervention into the upcoming election, which meant that American voters didn't get to decide just by themselves on who should be the president. There would be intervention by the government of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. The president didn't really even care if an investigation happened. What he wanted was the announcement that there was one, just the video of something that could cast doubt on Joe Biden's integrity. And they also said that in this, as he was doing this, he was pressuring Ukraine, holding up military aid to make sure that President Zelensky did what he wanted. That's the basic abuse of power argument.
We're going to go to Kelsey on this.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Obstruction of Congress, Kelsey. I mean, what exactly are the charges there?
This is where Congress is essentially saying that the president has put himself in the way of their ability to conduct their constitutional duty of oversight. So they're saying that every time that he told a member of his staff not to appear, all the times that he prevented witnesses from bringing evidence, I'm thinking of Gordon Sondland, who said he was not able to bring over records that he wanted to bring from the State Department. They say that that is all the president going outside of the role of the presidency and preventing Congress from doing their constitutional duty. It's important to remember, with putting on our kind of education hats here, is that Congress is supposed to be able to oversee the actions of the executive. That's why they pass laws, and then the president's job is to execute the laws. And they say that if they do not impeach the president on this charge, they will be doing harm to the institution of Congress for decades to come, because it will make it so any president could basically say they're not going to comply with requests from Congress.
Mara, you and I have talked about this before. Yeah. The idea of that obstruction charge may be obscure to some people, but right. The effects could be very
Yes, this one is the more profound charge. I have one question for Kelsey first, though. One of the questions that people have is, if Congress felt this strongly about the president basically stiffing them across the board in every way, shape, and form, as Gerald Nadler said, refusing to honor subpoenas for documents and witnesses, why didn't they go to court to force him to do that? That's what the judicial branch is for, to referee disputes between the executive and the legislative branch. And for instance, they never even issued a subpoena to John Bolton. They removed the subpoena from John Bolton's deputy, Charlie Kupperman. You know, so why didn't they, even if they were going to proceed with due haste on impeachment, why not also go to court just to assert your authority?
A House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff has addressed this a couple of times, and he has basically said that going through the courts was not possible because it was going to take too long. It was going to take 3 months in the first court, and then there would be appeals and more appeals, and this would end up taking months, if not years, to be litigated in the courts. And his point was that there is an election coming up in 11 months, as we have already discussed, and he says the security and the fate of this election is at stake, and that the House felt that they needed to take action before that time to ensure the security and, frankly, the confidence of the nation in the election.
So they're saying it was either or. If you go to court, you have to hold up the proceedings in the House. You couldn't do both at the same time. You couldn't proceed with impeachment while you're also planting your flag in the court and having those things happen on parallel tracks.
Well, politically, there would be the argument then, why move forward?
Why aren't you waiting for the court?
Right.
Why
not? If you started it, you got to see it.
And do you know the answer to the mystery? Why did they never issue a subpoena to John Bolton?
That's not something that has been well addressed, I think. It's a question that we ask people often on the Hill, staff and members.
Especially since his lawyer was tantalizing everyone, saying that, you know, he had things to talk about and that there were things that he wanted to disclose.
And his lawyer, who's Charlie Kupperman's lawyer, John Bolton's deputy, who did get a subpoena briefly until the House pulled it back, said, hey, we'll go and testify if a court tells us to. They actually sued Congress and the president at the same time, Bolton's attorney, to go to court and to see if the court would adjudicate this clash of separation of powers clash.
One argument that I have heard on that is that they felt that issuing subpoenas could invite the president to try to block them again or try to tell the people not to show up, and that they were hoping that Bolton and others would voluntarily come forward and offer information.
But he'd already told Bolton not to testify.
I do have a question. Because once this moves to the Senate, and we have Schumer saying, saying we'd like to have Bolton testify and the others testify. Doesn't that undercut the articles of impeachment, the very idea of obstruction of Congress?
Well, you mean if they ended up testifying?
Well, yes, but
they're not going to. But yes, I suppose if the witnesses all of a sudden came forward in the Senate, it would.
To some degree, I think Schumer's request was to illustrate, again, the idea that the White House is obstructing Congress.
Yeah,
because
his
expectation, but just in talking to other Democrats, they always expected that Republicans were going to say no to their witness requests. And some of this is a little bit of messaging to voters and to other Democrats that they are doing everything in their power to try to ensure the process that they believe is fair.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News of the House vote on two articles of impeachment against President Donald J. Trump. Just moments ago, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy spoke on the House floor. Let's take a listen.
Unfortunately, this day has come where individuals purely for political reasons, with no facts, move forward with impeachment.
We are joined in studio by NPR's Mara Liasson, along with NPR's Kelsey Snell, who is on the Hill. I am also in studio with NPR's Lulu Garcia-Navarro. I mean, Kelsey, I want to turn to you. Can you do a reset for us? We are in this moment. Donald Trump is set to become the third president in American history to be impeached by the House of Representatives. We are hearing the House Minority Leader there, Kevin McCarthy, say that this is a sad day. What are we expected to see in the next few hours?
We are starting now with a vote that basically kicked off the day with Republicans saying that the House should go home and not even vote at all on these articles of impeachment. We're expecting that to fail shortly here with Democrats voting it down. And then they will move on to a debate on a procedural motion. This is all leading up to a vote sometime later this evening, potentially 7, 8 o'clock at night, on the final two articles of impeachment, two separate votes. The day is being presided over by Diana DeGette of Colorado. She is a close ally of leadership here in the House. And she is going to be making sure that all of the trains run on time and everybody has their chance to debate. The real debate on the articles of impeachment themselves, though, won't really get started until late this morning when they are done with all of the procedural business that they need to do to move forward with such a momentous vote.
Let's talk a little bit about Attorney General Bill Barr and where he lives in this impeachment inquiry and now vote, because in previous impeachments, obviously, the Department of Justice would have had a big role, and it hasn't.
Well, Bill Barr hasn't really had a role here. He's been a big defender of the president. It was interesting. He came up fleetingly in the transcript, the rough transcript. It wasn't an actual transcript. I guess it was a reconstructed transcript of the call between President Trump and President Zelensky of Ukraine, where he said, please be in touch with the attorney general when you open this investigation into the Bidens. Apparently, that didn't happen. The Justice Department has said they never were contacted by Zelensky. But Barr has played a big role in a lot of legal controversies in this administration, but not this one.
Yeah. Another name that is often linked to these impeachment inquiry proceedings, that of Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's personal attorney. He's someone Democrats would like to hear from. Unlikely, though.
Yes, unlikely. I think he would say he has attorney-client privilege, and he certainly would refuse to testify. They have not subpoenaed him, to my knowledge. Is that correct, Kelsey?
Yes, that's right.
They have not subpoenaed him. But the thing that's interesting about Rudy Giuliani is he is continuing to try to go to Ukraine, meet with people there, collect information that he says shows that Joe Biden did something wrong.
Up until very recently,
something that, as he puts it, will help my client, the president.
I would note that as much as Democrats would like to hear from Rudy Giuliani, I have talked to Republicans who are quite frank about the fact that they do not want to hear from him, that they think that would turn – they're trying to avoid the impression, particularly in the Senate. Republicans want to avoid it becoming a giant partisan circus, and they have a great concern that inviting Giuliani there would do that.
But, Kelsey, aren't – there are Republicans whom we have heard from – who do not appreciate what Rudy Giuliani was doing. They may not say so publicly, but this has definitely been a concern among a subset of Republicans about his role in Ukraine and working at the behest of his client, President Trump, essentially conducting a second tier of American foreign policy.
Yeah, I have heard from many Republicans who feel uncomfortable about what Rudy Giuliani did and what his involvement was. But I have not yet really heard from any Republicans who say that Rudy Giuliani's actions that they find concerning are necessarily an indictment of the president. They separate those two things in their minds.
We're going to turn now to the president himself, I think, because obviously, his reaction, what he's been thinking about all this, is of paramount importance. President Trump spoke yesterday. Let's listen.
Are you going to watch the House proceedings tomorrow?
I'm not watching. I've not seen it. Look, it's a hoax. The whole impeachment thing is a hoax. We look forward to getting onto the Senate. We're not entitled to lawyers. We're not entitled to witnesses. We're not entitled to anything in the House. It's a total sham.
That's something that he's repeated over and over, and again, talking about what he thinks.
And isn't true.
And again, talking about what he thinks about impeachment, and let's listen to that.
The word impeachment is a dirty word, and it's a word that was only supposed to be used in special occasions, high crimes and misdemeanors. In this case, there was no crime whatsoever, not even a little tiny crime. There was no crime whatsoever, and they know it. And they go into those rooms, and they close those doors down in the basement, and they say, I'll tell you what they say, they just laugh, because it's to them it's a joke.
That was President Trump. Now let's listen into the House proceedings.
Madam Speaker, I rise to a question of the privilege of the House and send to the desk a privileged resolution.
The clerk will report the resolution.
Whereas Chairman Schiff and Chairman Nadler willfully and intentionally violated the rules of the House of Representatives by abusing and exceeding their powers as chairman of committees. Whereas on September 9, 2019, without consultation of the ranking minority member, in violation of Rule 9 of the rules of the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Chairman Schiff, in coordination with the Committees on Oversight and Reform and Foreign Affairs, announced a wide-ranging investigation into the Trump-Giuliani-Ukraine scheme. Whereas on September 26, 2019, in an unprecedented action, Chairman Schiff unilaterally
This is the clerk of the House, Susan Cole.
The August 2019 whistleblower complaint. Whereas on September 26, 2019, in his opening statement at a public hearing, Chairman Schiff engaged in a false retelling of the July 25, 2019 telephone conversation between President Trump and President Zelensky. Whereas on November 20th, 2019, a letter was transmitted from the ranking minority member to Chairman Schiff requesting, pursuant to House Resolution 660, the concurrence of the chair to issue certain subpoenas. Whereas on November 20th, 2019, after excusing the witnesses at an open hearing and without prior notice to the Republicans on the committee, Chairman Schiff announced that the committee had a business matter to take up and convened an impromptu business meeting to consider the ranking minority members' November 20th request concerning certain subpoenas. Whereas on November 20th, 2019, Chairman Schiff violated Clause 2G3 of Rule 11 of the Rules of the House of Representatives, which states, the chair of a committee shall announce the date, place, and subject matter of a committee meeting, which may not commence earlier than the third calendar day on which members have notice thereof.
The clerk shall suspend. The House will come to order. Clerk may continue.
Whereas on November 20th, 2019, Chairman Schiff's action further violated paragraph 4B of House Resolution 660, which states, in the case that the chair declines to concur in a proposed action of the ranking minority member shall have the right to refer to the committee for decision the question whether such authority shall be so exercised, and the chair shall convene the committee promptly to render that decision, subject to the notice procedures for a committee meeting under Clause 2G, 3A, and B of Rule 11. Whereas on November 21st, 2019, pursuant to Clause 2J1 of Rule 11 of the Rules of the House of Representatives, all Republican members on the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence wrote...
We're listening to the House Clerk Susan Cole read a Republican motion. NPR's Kelsey Snell is with us. Kelsey, can you explain?
Yeah, this is what's known as a privileged resolution. So the Republicans are calling for another vote to condemn Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, for how they handled this investigation.
And is that something that we were expecting?
We are expecting that there could be a number of these procedural motions. These are things that, you know, Democrats have plenty of votes to vote down. They can dispatch with these in a relatively quick manner. But it's a way for Republicans to lodge additional objections before they even get to the point of debating these actual articles of impeachment.
Before this moment, we were listening to a clip of President Trump talking about the fact that he believes the process has been rigged, that Republicans haven't been able to call their own witnesses, which is not true, Mara Liasson.
House Judiciary Committee Jerry Nadler invited the president's lawyer, Pat Cipollone, to participate on two different days. He said, you know, you can come, you can bring lawyers. If you want to have a witness, you can ask for that. So the White House said no. They didn't want to participate. They didn't want to legitimize the process. They said it was a scam and a hoax, and they were looking forward to the Senate trial where they felt that they would get a fairer hearing.
And that's been the Republican messaging, though, all along about process the whole time, saying that the process has been rigged.
Right, as if they were shut out. 45 Republicans were always participating in the House Intelligence Committee hearings, even if they were behind closed doors at first. Transcripts of those hearings, depositions, were released. And there's always been Republicans present.
Though, Mara, you can probably speak to this better than I can. I understand that this is speaking to the unfairness of an impeachment trial is just part of the basic politics of what goes into this.
Absolutely. If you are not in the majority in the House, you complain about the process, because that's all you can do.
And the process is something that has been, as we're seeing now, politicized in this moment. Kelsey, can you say more about the specific allegations Republicans are putting at the feet of Gerald Nadler, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and Adam Schiff, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee?
Yeah, so as I've been listening along to, just so that we can, so listeners can understand, we don't get to see these motions before they are brought up. So these are kind of coming up as we go. They're popping up, and we'll be kind of dealing with them as they come. And so as we read and listen to what they're saying, Republicans are essentially saying that Democrats made it so Republicans could not get the information that they needed. They couldn't present their own case. And they're also accusing Democrats of misreading parts of the transcript of the call between President Trump and President Zelensky of
Ukraine. We should say it wasn't an actual transcript of the
Correct.
Call. It was a partial transcript of the call. We've never actually seen an actual transcript.
And that's true. And that, I should say that Republicans are calling it a transcript. So they're basically saying that both Chairman Schiff and Chairman Nadler abused their powers of as the chairman of these committees to oppress Republicans and oppress their rights as the minority party.
If we can take a step back, it is interesting how people can read that transcript of the phone call from July 25th between President Trump and the leader of Ukraine, President Zelensky, and see completely different things, Mara. Republicans look at that and say with a straight face that there was nothing wrong with that.
Well, I have yet to really understand what they mean when the president says, Well, when Zelensky brings up the idea, I'm ready to buy more javelins, and the president says, but I want you to do us a favor, though. Why that isn't asking a foreign country. And then he goes on to explain what the favor is. It's to conduct two investigations, one into this debunked conspiracy theory that it was Ukraine, not Russia, who hacked the DNC in 2016, and then to open an investigation of the Bidens. That happened. He also repeated it in full view of the cameras on the South Lawn when somebody said, what exactly did you want Ukraine to do? And he said, I wanted Ukraine to start an investigation of the Bidens, and while we're at it, China should do the same thing. But there's no doubt that Republicans and Democrats are in two separate universes.
Okay, let's take a pause here and listen in on this procedural. No, they are taking a vote now on the House floor on a procedural vote, which gives us an opportunity to talk a little bit more about how we got to this moment. We are listening to special coverage of the House vote on articles of impeachment of Donald J. Trump. We have heard weeks, I think it's been months, Mara, of testimony now. This originated, Nancy Pelosi tapped Adam Schiff, actually, to spearhead the impeachment proceedings. Not Gerald Nadler, House Judiciary, which he picked it up later. But this was Adam Schiff's boat to steer from the beginning. And they called dozens of witnesses. Some were people who had firsthand knowledge of that whistleblower call, some expert analysts who gave their subject matter expertise about Ukraine. This all started with a whistleblower, yep. Mara.
And none of the witnesses contradicted the basic charges in the whistleblower complaint. The president did ask a foreign government to open an investigation into his political rival, and he did withhold two things, military aid and a meeting. Whether those two things were connected explicitly was one of the things that the two sides debated. Some people, like Gordon Sondland, the current ambassador to the EU, said he just inferred that the two things were related, that if the Ukrainians didn't open an investigation or announce an investigation before the cameras, they wouldn't get the aid or the meeting. Other people said that was just Sondland's conjecture. But for the most part, all of the witnesses corroborated the whistleblower complaint. What the White House decided not to do was to provide people like Mick Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, who might have been an exculpatory witness for the president. Those people were not allowed to testify. Even there were two witnesses that the Republicans called, Kurt Volker, a former special envoy to Ukraine, and Tim Morrison, a deputy national security advisor. I think that was his title. And they did not totally they were unable to obliterate the basic charges that the president did ask a foreign government to help him in the upcoming election.
Now, Republicans will say that they do not see an impeachable offense here. Even if the ones that do say that they think that maybe the president did not behave in the ideal manner, they say that that doesn't necessarily mean that he should be removed from office or impeached.
And they've actually gone on air saying that actually he was legitimately interested in corruption.
Correct.
In Ukraine, that this was an incredibly corrupt country in his view, and that that is something that he was interested in his position as president. That afforded him the opportunity to speak to the president of Ukraine and discuss it.
Except there's no evidence of the president ever talking about corruption. The word corrupt or corruption does not come up in his conversation with President Zelensky. He was asked on the South Lawn, have you ever asked a foreign country to open an investigation into corruption into something other than your political rivals? And he said, oh, we'd have to check on that. In other words, there's no evidence that the president cared about corruption. It's true that Ukraine was a corrupt country and had a history of corruption. But don't forget, the president provided military aid to Ukraine in 2017 and 2018. Hunter Biden was on that board since 2014. There was ample opportunity to ask Ukraine to look into Joe Biden's son before this, but it was only when Joe Biden became a presidential candidate did the president decide to do this.
We're going to take a step back now and look at how we got here. The House Intelligence Committee opened public impeachment hearings last month. In his introductory remarks, Democratic Chairman Adam Schiff sought to convey a sense of what he saw as the gravity and historic importance of the proceedings.
The questions presented by this impeachment inquiry are whether President Trump sought to exploit that ally's vulnerability and invite Ukraine's interference in our elections, whether President Trump sought to condition official acts, such as a White House meeting or U.S. military assistance, on Ukraine's willingness to assist with two political investigations that would help his reelection campaign. And if President Trump did either, whether such an abuse of his power is compatible with the office of the presidency.
The ranking Republican on the committee, Devin Nunes, offered a very different view, describing the proceedings as theatrical and partisan.
After vowing publicly that impeachment requires bipartisan support, Democrats are pushing impeachment forward without the backing of a single Republican. The witnesses deemed suitable for television by the Democrats were put through a closed-door audition process in a cult-like atmosphere in the basement of the Capitol, where Democrats conducted secret depositions, released a flood of misleading and one-sided leaks, and later selectively release transcripts in a highly staged manner.
That set the stage for the first witnesses, starting with acting U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor, who testified about the special relationship between the U.S. and Ukraine.
Ukraine is important to the security of the United States. The largest country in Europe by landmass, Ukraine is a young democracy struggling to join Europe and ally itself with the United States. It has been violently attacked by Russia, which continues its armed aggression against Ukraine to this day. If we believe in the principle of the sovereignty of nations, on which our security and the security of our friends and allies depends, if we believe that nations get to decide on their own economic, political, and security alliances, we must support Ukraine in its fight against its bullying neighbor. Russian aggression cannot stand.
Ambassador Taylor also brought new information to the hearing. He talked about something he learned about after his closed-door testimony before the House Intelligence Committee. It centered on a meeting held by the U.S. Ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland. Taylor described a cell phone conversation between Sondland and President Trump, a conversation overheard by one of his staff members.
Following that meeting, in the presence of my staff, at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv. The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
The committee would eventually hear testimony from Gordon Sondland, but House Democrats called other witnesses before him, including Marie Yovanovitch, former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. She described a plot to oust her led by President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. And she warned that the Trump administration has been undercutting American diplomats abroad.
This is about far, far more than me or a couple of individuals. As Foreign Service professionals are being denigrated and undermined, the institution is also being degraded. This will soon cause real harm if it hasn't already. The State Department as a tool of foreign policy often doesn't get the same kind of attention or even respect as the military might of the Pentagon. But we are, as they say, the pointy end of the spear. If we lose our edge, the U.S. will inevitably have to use other tools even more than it does today. And those other tools are blunter, more expensive, and not universally effective.
For his part, Gordon Sondland testified that he was doing what the president asked. Sondland, of course, was one of the so-called three amigos who, with Energy Secretary Rick Perry and Kurt Volker, then a special envoy to Ukraine, was working on Ukraine policy. Here's a clip from his testimony.
Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and I worked with Mr. Rudy Giuliani on Ukraine matters at the express direction of the President of the United States. We did not want to work with Mr. Giuliani. Simply put, we were playing the hand we were dealt. We all understood that if we refused to work with Mr. Giuliani, we would lose a very important opportunity to cement relations between the United States and Ukraine. So we followed the President's orders.
Sondland was questioned by the Democrats' staff attorney, who asked about a cell phone call Sondland had with President Trump, a call that was overheard by David Holmes, a diplomat in the U.S. Embassy in Kyiv, who said that the president was speaking so loudly that at one point Ambassador Sondland held the phone away from his ear. We've got this clip from Sondland's testimony. The first speaker is Daniel Goldman, the Democrats' staff attorney.
And you don't recall the specifics of holding your phone outside, far away from your ear, as Mr. Holmes testified, but you have no reason to question his recollection of that, do you?
I mean, it seems a little strange I would hold my phone here. I probably had my phone close to my ear, and he claims to have overheard part of the conversation, and I'm not going to dispute what he did or didn't hear.
Well, he also testified that you confirmed to President Trump that you were in Ukraine at the time, and that President Zelensky, quote, loves your ass, unquote. Do you recall saying that?
Yeah, it sounds like something I would say. That's how President Trump and I communicate, a lot of four-letter words. In this case, three-letter.
In his testimony, David Holmes made clear that the U.S. Embassy in Kiev believed that a meeting between President Zelensky and President Trump was important to the Ukrainian president's reform agenda.
Based on questions and statements I've heard, some of you on this committee appear to believe that Russia and its security services did not conduct a campaign against our country, and that perhaps, somehow, for some reason, Ukraine did. This is a fictional narrative that has been perpetrated and propagated by the Russian security services themselves.
That's the voice of Fiona Hill, a former National Security Council official who is testifying alongside David Holmes. She used her opening statement to offer a fact check of the unfounded and debunked claim that Ukraine interfered in the 2016 U.S. election.
Were you encouraged as of your last day in the office that U.S. policy towards the Ukraine was headed in the right direction?
I was not.
And why was that?
Well, I was concerned about two things in particular. One was, again, the removal of our ambassador. And again, I will say for the record that the president has a perfect right to remove any ambassador at any time for any reason. But I was very concerned about the circumstances in which her reputation had been maligned repeatedly on television and in all kinds of exchanges. I felt that that was completely unnecessary. If the president wanted to remove an ambassador, which he did quite frequently, there was a number of ambassadors removed who were not political but career officials. That was done, but without these kinds of interventions. Mm-hmm. I wondered what that message was being sent. So there was that. And then on the second front, it was very clear at this point that there was, let's just say, a different channel in operation in relations to Ukraine, one that was domestic and political in nature, and that was very different from the channel or the loop, however you like it, that I and my colleagues were in, where we were focused on bilateral relations and U.S. foreign policy toward Ukraine. And these two things had diverged at this point.
Fiona Hill was being questioned there by Stephen Castor, the Republicans' staff attorney. Fiona Hill was among the two final witnesses called by the House Intelligence Committee for public testimony. The proceedings then passed to the House Judiciary Committee, which weighed whether to draft articles of impeachment against President Trump. The committee held its first hearing last week. In the hot seat, four law professors, all experts on constitutional law. Three of them appeared at the invitation of Democrats. They testified that, yes, President Trump's attempts to pressure Ukraine into announcing investigations that would benefit him personally do warrant impeachment. Here are Noah Feldman of Harvard, Stanford's Pamela Karlan, and Michael Gerhardt of the University of North Carolina.
The abuse of office occurs when the president uses a feature of his power, the awesome power of his office, not to serve the interests of the American public, but to serve his personal, individual, partisan electoral interests.
Drawing a foreign government into our elections is an especially serious abuse of power because it undermines democracy itself. Our Constitution begins with the words, "We the people," for a reason.
If what we're talking about is not impeachable, then nothing is impeachable.
The dissenting voice was Jonathan Turley of George Washington University. He was the Republican sole witness in that hearing. His argument that Democrats have rushed the process and that they presented no compelling evidence of the commission of a crime, no proof of a quid pro quo.
That is why this is wrong. It's not wrong because President Trump is right. His call was anything but perfect. It's not wrong because the House has no legitimate reason to investigate the Ukrainian controversy. It's not wrong because we're in an election year. There is no good time for an impeachment. No, it's wrong because this is not how you impeach an American president.
A hearing to debate the two articles in the Judiciary Committee stretched 14 hours before Chairman Nadler abruptly ended them. The next morning, the House Judiciary Committee passed the articles of impeachment with a party-line vote, sending the articles to the full House of Representatives for a vote. And that brings us to today. And today we are awaiting the House of Representatives, their vote on the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. There are two articles of impeachment that they will decide on today. The first is abuse of power, whether or not the president abused his office in his relations with Ukraine. And the second article of impeachment has to do with obstruction of Congress, whether or not the president, his Republican allies, and the White House refused to hand over documents and witnesses for the House inquiry. We are awaiting what is expected to be a long day of debate on the House floor. Wrapping up, we expect, in about 6 hours or so, with a full House vote. You are listening. You are listening to special coverage from NPR News of the House impeachment vote.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio. We're listening to NPR's live coverage of the House of Representatives debating whether to impeach President Trump. A full House vote is expected later today. You can find classical music on our All Classical HD service. Visit WPR.org for more details.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio.
Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Gerald Nadler, for what they say is abuse of power. This is expected to fail. It will go down likely along party lines. It's intended really just to give Republicans one more chance to lodge their complaints about the process that we've seen in getting to this day of an impeachment vote.